This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, here we are gathered around the fireplace for this auspicious occasion, the dispensement of knowledge from
goodness,
Douglas County's authorized, bonded, and official Commissioner of Dirt.
And I did not select that name. They put that on me a few years back, and I thought it took me a while to get used to it. So
I believe that you'll be stuck with it in perpetuity.
I think that's perpetuity is correct, because a lot of people call me the Commissioner of Dirt now that I don't even know them.
You said you have 4 inches of snow at your house?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I had two yesterday and another two today.
Wow. Yeah. And for those of us who look outside and just see a lot of rain, it's hard to imagine.
Yeah.
But, of course, we had pictures up at the KQEN Facebook page last night from out in Melrose. And you could, you know, it was at least an inch and a half or so at that point there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
As is typical with many storms, it's like right here in town, we've kind of got bypassed. Though I've been warned to be careful how I phrase that, because a couple of years ago, it didn't go quite that way.
I know. You mean Snowmageddon?
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
I know. Gosh, that was a nightmare. It still is a nightmare. I've still got 5 years worth of cleanup at my place to do. But, yeah, at any rate, I went home yesterday. We had that the day before. We had a couple of inches there. And then yesterday I was going home about 2 in the afternoon to do something. And by the time I got to Hoover Hill Road, which is about 4 miles out of Winston, here's these big flakes coming down. And geez Louise, went from rain to flakes. And by the time I got home, it was a blizzard. And I'm another, you know, couple miles down that road. And it was, I mean, it was like a total blizzard. It wasn't windy, but by golly, you couldn't hardly see anything because of all the snow. It was beautiful. And this morning was very frozen when I left. So I don't get up at 3 like you.
I get up before that. How do you think I'm here at 3?
Well, I don't know. Maybe you sleep here, for crying out loud. But
there's rumors. Now, I've been up since about 2:15.
Oh, geez, Louise. Well, you beat me by about 2.5 hours,
because okay.
I used to get up about 4:30.
I pass people leaving bars. So.
Good thing you pass them and they don't pass you. Golly. Well, thank you for listening out there. And this is a show about garden ideas, landscaping ideas, and hints, and how to do this or how to do that. And also, if no matter what I'm speaking about, if you have a question about anything along those lawns, gardens, shrubs, trees, tomatoes, whatever, feel free to break in and call 673-4464. Get you right on, and you can ask me a question. And 99 times out of 100, I've got an answer. I think I said I don't know about 4 years ago. I'm not sure. But at any rate,
you have a great future of politics, then.
I thought so. But that's all in the past, partner. Okay, well, it was kind of interesting. I was thinking, what could I write about or speak about this week? And searching my brain for things. You know, it's snowing and it's cold and it's January I don't know why, but I thought of fire pits. The word fire pits came into my mind. Well, we build them in our landscapes upon request from a client. And fire pits are kind of a cool addition to the landscape. You know, it kind of turns your backyard into almost a camping area, I guess, but not quite. And they're fun to build. They're fun. You enjoy them. Usually not in July, August, or September. But, you know, most of the other months of the year, you can have a nice small fire out there, or this time of year, you can have a very large fire and it wouldn't do any harm and maybe warm you up a little bit and dry you up a little bit. But it wouldn't be a fun thing to sit out there today in a chair and have a nice conversation while it was pouring or snowing on you. So, but the fire pits are a nice addition to the landscape. And this is relatively new to the landscape world since there's always been some, but it seems to be catching on more and more as I see more and more of this happening in different yards, and we're asked to build them, or we're asked to where do I get the materials, is there any place that has a fire pit model or something that I can buy the whole thing? And yes, there is. Willamette Greystone is one. They have some really nice ones there. All the bricks and all the directions and all the grates and everything else, and and they can help you put it together or give you instructions. But anyway, to have one in your yard, it really is a nice addition, provided you've got the room and the space to do it. And it needs some relatively flat ground. So if you have a pretty good steep hillside in your backyard, it may not work. You might have to excavate a very super large hole to get it done. But the backyard fire pit, and you can also have it in the front yard if you want, but then the neighbors stop and they gawk and they talk and all that kind of stuff, and they want to know how you did it and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, this is a place to relax. This is a place to sit back and, just kind of enjoy the evening, if you will. In the spring, when it's 65 degrees during the day, and daylight is extended past 5 o'clock, doesn't get dark till say 6:30 or 7:30, for crying out loud, and you just want to sit and relax, but you might be a little chilly. So if you had this fire pit and you have some nice wood and you can sit there in your lawn chair and just enjoy the evening, just enjoy the spring coming on with your kids, grandkids, wife, whatever, and roast some marshmallows, that kind of thing. But more folks are installing these as an outdoor entertainment area. And it's essentially what it is. It's like a living room outside. And in a cool evening in early spring, or even in the fall, we get into late September, and the maximum heat kind of is over the hump. And the nights are getting a little cooler, but the daylight hours are still sufficient enough that you can actually go outside and sit down and relax and enjoy the evening. A fire pit's a nice thing. It's kind of enjoyable. It's just a nice place to sit and relax and visit. It's like you're camping and staying at home at the same time. You can put a hot dog or a marshmallow on a stick, and dinner is served without any dishes to wash, that kind of thing. And that would be a little rough. It's roughing it, but that's all right. Now, you can build your own fire pit from rock or decorative concrete block. It's pretty simple. And the size is up to you. Just think about the size and shape prior to the construction. Maybe draw some plans and get out in the yard and say, let's see, do I have enough room over here? Do I have enough room over here? What do I actually have to do? There are books down there at the box stores that say, hey, how to build your own fire pit at home, or garden fire pits, those kinds of things. And they'll show you step-by-step photos and diagrams, how to do it and how to do it right. And like I say, there are kits available. And I know Willamette Greystone has them, and there are probably some other places, but I don't shop at those other places. So they are available. All sizes, shapes, colors. And then there's the type, of course, that are propane, and they usually come in a kit, and it's a propane deal where you just go out and turn it on and light it up, and you're good to go. And when you're done, you just turn the knob, turn the fire off, and you go in. It's more of a visual thing. It's not a heat kind of thing, whereas a wood fire pit that has burning wood in there, it's going to give you some warmth in the chill of an evening and that kind of thing. But if you want to, you can build your own, like I say, from rock, large rock. It doesn't have to be fancy. It can just be rocks the size of a basketball, and you can pick them up at different places that sell rock. Uncle Sam and Gravel, the co-op, and other places where you can go collect your own in the wild. And there are many rock pits around our our county that you can go in there with a pickup truck and talk to the owner or with a foreman or whoever's there and say, hey, I'm going to build a fire pit and I need about 15 rocks or 20 rocks. How much would 20 rocks cost you? Probably cost you about $5, maybe $10 if they want to really gouge you. And you take them home and you you excavate your fire pit and you lay your rock in there in a circle, square, whatever design you might want, and there you've got your natural fire pit. And that's the kind of fire pit I have built over the years. And of course with Snowmageddon a couple of years ago, there was plenty of brush piles I had, so I didn't put any rocks around the brush piles when I burned them, and they burned for 2 or 3 days this last winter. This fall, I think some of them are still smoking. I'm not sure. But like I say, the size is up to you. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a great big deal, 10 feet across or something like that. Usually 3 or 4 feet across the center of the pit. It makes a nice fire, fire pit. You should excavate the natural earth down, oh, say, at least 6 inches and maybe put a layer of gravel 2 or 3 inches down there just to kind of make sure you're not connecting the fire with any roots or underground. You know, there's some vegetation maybe down that deep, or maybe there's a root from the maple tree. The maple tree might be 20 feet away, but you didn't, when you were excavating, you didn't excavate deep enough, and another inch you would have hit this massive root that's holding that tree and possibly start a fire in the fire pit and either damage the tree or who knows, you might even burn the root up and catch the tree on fire. That's highly unlikely, but what the heck, you just kind of throw those things in so people will listen. But anyway, when you're building this, you want to make sure after you've placed it to stay away from any wood structures like a fence, a deck, side of your home, garage. Also take note of shrubs and trees, like say within a 15-foot space in between the fire pit and where the shrubs might be, because you want to be safe when you're doing this thing. Beware of overhanging branches from any large trees or shrubs. You might think, you've got a big oak tree or a maple tree, and maybe there's a branch 8 or 9, maybe 10 feet in the air that's kind of hanging over. You know, it's kind of a nice shady spot. Well, sometimes you get a fire going and it gets you put a little bit too much wood in it and the sparks are kind of going up, and it's maybe late fall and the leaves are crisp. You never know when an ember might fly up with a little bit of breeze, land on some leaves, maybe burn some branches, that kind of thing. Yeah, and so if you have that kind of thing, overhanging branches, you want to prune them off. Make sure you got a nice, clear, clean area to be safe. That's the biggie. And make also note of how close is your water hose? How close is a water spigot? Just in case something gets out of control, you want to be able to quickly extinguish anything before it spreads to the rest of your yard or the neighborhood. And that's always good. And a gravel, once you get the actual structure built, a gravel barrier around the pit, say 10 feet wide, and it's needed to keep any sparks, like, again, sparks that fly out from starting a fire outside the pit. I mean, if the sparks come out, they'll land within, say, a 5-foot radius of where they originated. But 10 feet just makes it extra safe. And on the gravel that you put around there, that's where you put your lawn chairs or what have you to enjoy your outdoor fire pit. So, and you can build your own with concrete block. And again, either Co-op or Willamette Greystone, or I think those two, maybe Coastal, has decorative concrete blocks that a lot of folks build retaining walls out of. I build retaining walls out of them, and they make a nice pit. It's decorative. It's going to last a long time, and a bit of fire is not going to hurt it a bit. And it just looks good, and it just becomes part of your landscape. You're not going to have any shrubbery near it. You're not going to have any trees near it. It's just an outdoor recreation site in your own yard. Again, the marshmallows on the stick can do that. If you have children, grandchildren, or even you and your wife can go out there and roast marshmallows. It's a cool thing to do. It's a relaxing thing to do. It keeps you home as well. Do we have a break coming up?
No, we do. You caught me there with marshmallows, and I'm
I should have brought some.
Well, no, they're not in my diet.
Oh, that's right.
Have to be low fat vegetables, mushrooms.
Okay, well, you can do that with carrots or peppers.
Well,
you know, onions. Put onions on a stick and roast them over an open fire.
Not onions. No, we'll be right back on that. 4:21. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, the Commissioner of Dirt on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All this talk of fire pits and food, I thought we were going to end up with a
We might have a barbecue out in the parking lot.
Now, I don't know that the mahi-mahi fish that you were talking about off the air, that wouldn't work really in the fire pit.
No, you wouldn't, but if you put a big grate on top of it, you could barbecue it.
Or if they were already cooked, you could just blacken them a little bit.
Bingo. Hey, you're on the right track now.
I'm taking notes.
You know, the first time, you know what, mahi-mahi is also known as bullnose dolphin. And the first one I caught was off the coast of Mazatlan, 28 years ago. And I had no idea what it was, and brought it in. It was about 4 feet long and 2 feet wide. They're skinny, wide fish. And the boat driver...
Skinny, wide fish?
Well, wide this way, but skinny this way.
Oh, okay. That's like jumbo shrimp.
I know. That's good. But our boat captain filleted it up, and I took part of it back to our hotel where we were staying, and they cooked it up for us. And it was the first time I'd ever had it. And it was absolutely delicious. They prepared it 4 different ways and with different sauces and stuff, and it was outrageously good. So now we have it at least once a month. You know, Costco might have it, or Freddy's might have it, and then my wife gets it and breads it, and oh, man, it's good.
This is the Lawn and Garden Show. Don't be concerned that you've gotten on the wrong station somehow.
I'm talking about the Sea Garden now.
Okay.
But I'm talking actually about fire pits in your backyard. So a smokeless fire, you want a smokeless fire, so don't burn green unseasoned wood in your fire pit, because you're going to smoke up the place, you're going to smoke up the neighborhood, your neighbors are not going to like you, and they're going to say, what in the world is that guy doing, man, oh man. But so the wood should be good and dry, seasoned and dry, so that it burns brightly. All wood will have a certain amount of smoke, but anything that's green or damp or wet, and when I say green, I mean freshly cut is what I'm speaking about. You put that in a fire, and it takes a while for it to ignite in a good fire, and eventually it will. But in the interim, while it's heating up, it's smoking like all get out. So avoid that. Be smart about that. And don't burn on a windy day for obvious reasons. Obvious. And, you know, if there's a little bit of breeze, that's okay. But you get a wind coming in there, you're going to have sparks flying all over the place. And you don't want to burn up your neighbor's yard. You don't want to burn up your yard. And, you know, after the sun goes down, usually the wind will die down as well. So don't do it in the middle of the afternoon. Wait for the evening to come. Wait till it gets kind of twilight and almost dark. That's when they're the best. That's when you get the most bang for the buck, okay? After the sun's down, nice fire in the backyard is a very relaxing time. It's a time for conversation, contemplation, or just telling ghost stories to your kids. They'll always remember those times. They say, remember the time Dad told us those stupid stories about ghosts when we're sitting in the backyard and we had a fire? Yeah, I remember that, Bob. Anyway, my dad did it, I know, a long time ago. But, you know, it's, and remember this, your fire pit is not a place to burn garbage. Wood only, please. No garbage. No, don't throw your old newspapers in there or anything like that, because it just kind of messes it up and the ambiance is worthless, all right? And so that's enough for fire pits. So since this is the time of year, pruning is, you know, boom, this is time to get it done. So there's a lot of shrubs out there, and they're needing to be pruned. I would drive around every day and I see, why don't those people do something with that one? That tree is going to fall in the street and do this. But a lot of folks are getting the job done now, and this is good. But there's many shrubs, and especially vines, that need pruning throughout the year to maintain their plant health and their vigor and their shape. And here's a good example. Wisteria. Wisteria is probably one of the fastest, wildest growing vines you can find. And it has beautiful flowers. Usually they're kind of a light purple, some of them are dark purple, some of them I've seen white, and they're garlands of flowers that hang down from the branches. And wisteria vines are just wild and, like I say, fast growers. They can cover your house or fence in no time if you plant them too close. But don't ever plant them against the house. you'll be miserable, because by the time they get going and you look at them and you say, geez Louise, that's up on the roof. What should I do? They're getting under the shakes or they're getting under the shingles. Yeah, that's when you start to have problems and you need to really whack them. So put them along a fence between you and your neighbors or whatever, and it's good. It'll work along a fence, or even on a pole. You have a round pole, 10 feet, you know, 10 foot pole, put it in the ground a couple of feet and put a wisteria at the bottom, and it climbs right up that puppy. And after a while, you don't even know that the pole's there, because the wisteria is so beautiful, and it's just, you can't see through it, it's so thick. But to really make it nice, it does require consistent pruning and shaping to keep it in bounds. I'm not saying whacking it to death, but as it grows, it has many, many branches, and these many, many branches, some of them are dead. And so those are the kind you want to keep pruned off. And if you want to keep it a certain size, don't be afraid to take some scissors out there and spend 15, 20 minutes just cutting the stuff that's growing wild out to the side or something. These guys can grow easily to 40 feet wide and tall. I've seen them. I've seen them take over yards. And so you want to make sure that you have plenty of space when you plant it, and that you're not going to infringe on the rest of the neighborhood, and it won't take over your neighbor's yard as well. So if you have them on a fence or a trellis, make sure that the structure is heavy duty, or the weight of the plant will collapse the fence or the trellis in no time at all. That's just the total, you know, one branch doesn't weigh much, but 1,000 branches weighs a lot. So so regular pruning is needed. And when I say regular, you know, the first couple of years, you're not going to do much of the pruning. But that, once it's established, say 3, 4, 5 years down the road, it's really growing. I've seen them grow 5 feet, 6 feet in 1 year easily. And so you want to clip those branches back and get it thick, get it full. And it has beautiful flowers that way. I've pruned wisteria in the spring, the summer, the fall, and never killed one. So it's not just springtime or it's just not fall. You can prune at any time. You get the energy and the vision. Because sometimes you got to look at this and say, hey, what do I want to do with that? Do I want to let it do this, or do I want to let it go sideways or taller, or you know what's? And once you get that vision, that's when you take the pruners out, and that's when you attack you attack that so that it'll do good. Now I've pruned them very, very heavy just to see if I could kill them, but they don't. They don't die. My first house in Roseburg, when I got out of the Marine Corps, my wife said, you know, I rented a house on Leland Street. And she described it to me, and I said, I don't remember it. I don't remember it at all. Well, the reason I didn't remember it, because I had never seen it, because it was covered with vines. It was covered with wisteria. It was covered with roses. It was covered with, you know, all kinds of stuff that the folks that had lived there for 40 years planted along the foundation of the house. And they neglected to prune. And so consequently, all these vines grew up. You couldn't even see the roof from the road, from the street. I looked, and as we pulled up from the airport when I got out of the Marine Corps, we pulled up to the house, and she says, there it is. And I went, wow, no wonder I don't remember it. I've never seen it before. And it was just covered with the stuff. So they're really wild. So you want to make sure you got the room and you've got the wherewithal to go out there and prune and do it. And there was, after I cut off the roof ones, they were... I got tired of it, so I just pulled them out. I wrapped a chain around them and pulled them out with a four-wheel drive pickup truck or cut the roots out. I just got them out. I couldn't handle it anymore, because no matter what I did to them, they were continually growing back, because once they're rooted, they're in. And so I just dig them up. But there was one of them in the middle of my front yard that was kind of growing wild, and I cut that way back. I cut it to the trunk on it was like 4 or 5 inches in diameter. It was like a tree, but you couldn't see it because of all the vines. So I went back and I chopped it all back until it was just a stick and just a couple of nubs of buds on the very top. Of course, my neighbor across the street, old Harry Hill, came over and says, oh, you ruined that one, Mike. And, you know, and I said, well, that's okay, Harry. I just want to see how it works. Well, by the next spring, it had produced many more vines, so I pruned it into a mushroom shape. In other words, anything that went down, I cut short, and I kept it round on the top. And in a couple of years, it was a beautiful, beautiful mushroom-shaped tree. It was only about 5 feet tall, maybe 6 feet, when it had all the branches on it. But I just cut it. I used scissors. I didn't have to use pruners or anything. Just, you know, shears that you use for sewing, and that worked really well. So it's a good tree, a good vine, and just make sure you have the space, and you're willing to go to work on it. There are a few other vines that bloom for most of the year. You know, except in the coldest months, like, say, December and January primarily. The clematis, of course, is a favorite for a lot of folks, and I like it too, especially the evergreen clematis. But there are more than 200 species of clematis, most of which are deciduous, and they lose their leaves in the winter. However, there are two evergreen varieties, and the one we carry is Clematis armandi. It has it's kind of the most popular, and it grows very, very well around here. It's very pretty. But armandi, believe it or not, is a native to China, and it grows wild in China and that part of the world. It's a very fast-growing vine, of course, and it grows to about 15 or 20 feet if it's unchecked. But it has large, leathery leaves that are about 6 inches long, without blooms on it, it's still an attractive plant. And the blooms are largely, they're very large, creamy white flowers, and they have a kind of a vanilla aroma from the leaves, and they appear in the spring in clusters. So there's clusters of flowers, and when it's blooming, it's a real showpiece. It doesn't grow as fast as the wisteria that I was just talking about, but it's in second place. It really does a good job. And of course, they do best in fast draining multi-type organic soils, not so good in heavy clay that we predominantly have here in Douglas County. They love morning sun and they like afternoon shade. That's their best spot. That's where they do the very, very best. If they're in hot afternoon sun, the new leaves or the newest leaves on the plant have a tendency to brown up and then starts, you know, green and brown on the leaves. And, you know, it's not something that you want to have. You got to cut them off, and pretty soon you got no leaves left because the sun is beaming in on it. But morning sun up to, say, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and then from 1 o'clock in the afternoon to sunset, hey, if it's in the shade, it does really well. We have a break?
Well, yeah, but you were just talking about vines, and I was just having bad memories of my backyard.
I know. You've got, I think it's a clematis on the side of your house that we've tried to keep in, and it has a trellis right there.
Oh, that, yeah.
Yeah. I haven't been over in a long time. You haven't asked me to come over and prune anything, so I'm sure it's taken over most of your house.
No, it's not, but it's kind of there to protect against the sun.
Ah, I see. Yeah.
And when I brought up the potential for taking it out, I was voted down.
Not by me, of course.
437 Mike Winters, Douglas County's Commissioner of Dirt, back in a moment. It's the Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon to you with the Afternoon Report coming up at 5 with Douglas County's news team. Ashley Claiborne joining me for that today. Dale Cranford off the rest of the week. Mike Winters, the Commissioner of Dirt, here this afternoon.
Yeah, and I've been talking about vines and color, summer color, and plants that, that can grow and you don't have to mess with them once they're established, except to prune them and keep them in shape. But they're like wild. They just do their thing and they do it well. And I've been talking about evergreen clematis here in the last segment. And trying to convince you of the how pretty it is and how tough it is, and they are tough, and they do well in just about any kind, even in Douglas County clay soil. If you amend the clay soil with some bark mulch or, you know, break it up so it's not just a solid brick of clay, they'll even grow on that. I mean, but the best thing is to excavate all that, put in brand new combo of organic potting soil and topsoil or even sand, mix it all together and plant it in that, and they just grow like gangbusters. But they just don't do well in an area of heavy sustained wind as well. And I was I didn't know that. It's like, how come? Of course, we're not very windy around here. So I guess the big leaves, the plant dries out possibly in a place that's very windy, especially in the summertime. And that has a detrimental effect to the plant. But anyway, these guys also need a trellis or a fence to grow on. And I've planted them at home there at the base of a tree, and they climb right up into the branches. You know, that's kind of neat that way. It's a slow starter, but once it's established, it does grow quickly. And establishment means if you planted it next month in February, a year from February, I mean, it would grow this next year. It wouldn't take off like a shot, but a year from this spring, with the root system already established and the warm weather hits, you'd be amazed at the growth that you would get. and also if you planted them along a fence, they also make a very showy privacy screen. So that's another use of them. Now, one of my clients wanted two of them planted at the base of their second story deck. They had a deck that where their master bedroom was, but it was on the second story of the house. And there was some like 6 by 8 timbers holding up the deck. And she says, I want something planted at the equipment that'll climb up these 6x8 posts and kind of break up the starkness of it. I said, okay, how about a couple of evergreen clematis? She says, that's perfect. She looked at them, and we put them in, and we watched them for a year, and we went over there maybe once or twice a year to do some extra work for them. And during the second year, they were starting to take off and climb up the posts as they were meant to do, and it was disguising the posts and getting really nice. Well, by about the third or fourth year, my client called me up and says, you got to do something with this clematis. I said, well, what's the problem? She says it's on our deck and it's trying to get into the sliding glass door in our bedroom. And I thought, whoa. And sure enough, I went over there, took a look at it. It had not only climbed up those posts, I think, oh gosh, a good 15, 18 feet up to the second story, and then it was growing along the railing. And the deck isn't large. The deck was probably, 8 feet long and 4 feet wide, just something to put a couple of chairs on and watch the sun go down, that kind of thing. And they were already growing along the railing and kind of wild. So I said, well, how about we just prune it and make it look good right along the rail? Keep it on the railing, but we'll just prune it a little bit tighter. Okay, let's try that. Well, by the end of that summer, she said, it ain't going to work, Mike. Take them out. And but they're so beautiful. And but it was going to take over their bedroom and their roof if we didn't do something about it. I had never seen them do that before. I mean, I've seen them in different locations from a horizontal perspective, but I didn't imagine them growing so quickly, 18 feet in the air and then surrounding their bedroom slider door. It just didn't. But anyway, we took them out, and that's after we had pruned them, fairly drastically for a couple of years in a row. But they grew faster and better, and so we did remove them. I tried to save them. The root systems were, the root systems were very lots of roots, and there was no way that we could get a good root ball on them for a lot of reasons. I tried to save them. I took them back to the nursery, put them in some pots, but they did not come out. Of course, when we transplanted them, it might have been May or June, so it was not really the prime time for transplanting. But I thought, well, let's try to save them. I just didn't want to throw them away. I hate to throw plants away if you can save them. Now, several varieties there are to choose from. The Armandi is the white one that I was just talking about with the long, green, leathery looking leaves. But there's one called Apple Blossom, which has kind of a pinkish white bloom. And there's one that's called Snowdrift, and it has pure white flowers. So I've only had the Armandi in my nursery. There's not too many growers that do evergreen clematis. I'm sure there are if I looked hard enough, but there's quite a bit of growing going on in the upper Willamette Valley, but I haven't been near to any all of those nurseries up there. There's just way too many to go to. You could spend a month visiting them all. But they're very, again, tough, and they're good, and they look good all the time. Now, the deciduous varieties have gorgeous flowers. The deciduous means they lose their leaves in the winter. But and it might be, December when they lose their leaves. So you see just branches for a couple of months, and then the new leaves pop out, and say mid-February, 1st of March. But there are too many varieties to list because there are just like hundreds of them. But they are great bloomers with lots of flowers. When they start blooming in the spring, they'll bloom all the way through the spring, the summer, and clear into the fall, and even till it gets very, very cold in, say, November or December. I have a Japanese maple about 12 feet tall off my front porch. My front porch is about 15 feet wide. And then there's this Japanese maple, and it's been there for quite a few years. And it's just a nice tree. And my wife planted a deciduous clematis at the base of it in a big pot. And this deciduous clematis over the years has climbed into the Japanese maple, wound its way up through all the way to the top of the tree. And it, like I say, the top of the tree is a good 12, maybe 15 feet tall now. And we prune it every year and keep it relatively low. But the vines are all through the tree. And several years ago, I'm sitting on the porch looking at this, and there's all these really bluish purple flowers all the way through this Japanese maple. And I thought, what in the world is that? Then I remembered, oh, the clematis. And the clematis blooms in the tree all summer, and the hummingbirds are super attracted to this. And so there's about a billion hummingbirds that live in there. And of course, and my wife has two or three huge hummingbird feeders hanging on the porch, so they're zipping back and forth between the feeders and the tree, and they build nests in the Japanese maple, and then they're feeding on the clematis flowers. It's a wild time all summer long, and it's an amazing thing. But you know, one day I'm sitting on my porch reading the paper, the News Review, of course, and you know, it's what, foot from my face, and all of a sudden a hummingbird flies between my eyes and the newspaper, and almost jumped off the chair. I mean, it was like, they make a sound like a little engine, you know, or higher pitch than that. But and they do that all the time to me when I'm out there. But I'm used to it now. So, and they're up there, the feeders. I'm probably, you know, 4 feet above my head, and they're up there, three or four of them beating each other up trying to get into the little the feeding orifice. And orify, I don't know what that is, but they're up there doing their thing, and they don't even care that I'm there. You know, I'm just sitting in a chair and looking up at them, and they're going, after they feed themselves and they run into the Japanese maple, and they're all sitting around in the Japanese maple. Then I've got this great big Colorado blue spruce about 20 feet away, and that's where they build nests, and they hang out in there. Now, most of them migrate south for the winter, but there's two or three hummingbirds that stay all winter long at our house, and they have nests up in this blue spruce. And so we're still putting out hummingbird juice on the porch for these two or three birds that hang out. And you don't see them every day. They're not as prolific as they are in the spring and the summer and the fall. But every once in a while, I catch one or two of them. They're at the feeder. They're doing their thing at the feeder. But their nests are way up in this blue spruce. It's Colorado blue spruce. And they do that because it's a very protective tree. If you ever grabbed a branch from a blue spruce, you come away with blood on your hands, because they're very, very sharp and stiff needles. And that keeps the predators out. And these little hummingbirds, they build their little nests in there, and they're safe and sound, ready to go. So, do we have a break?
We do.
Okay. Good timing. I know this stuff.
All right. 4:52. Mike Winter's back in a moment. It's the Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
4:54, 6 minutes away from 5 o'clock. Drive carefully on your way home. Periods of very heavy rain around the Umpqua Valley. We've had numerous accidents this afternoon. Not nearly as bad as it was this morning when things were so icy between 5:30 and about 7 o'clock this morning. For a while there, it was accident back to back to back. So if you're heading out of the office, be careful on your way home.
Well, you know, there was a lady that crashed into the bridge there on Highway 99 just down from the nursery and almost went through the bridge, and it's there are concrete railings, and those railings were almost gone. That happened this morning. And
wow.
It was icy.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And a lot of people grow way too fast out there. Anyway, I've been talking about clematis and how nice it is, and good bloomer, good tough plant. But here's the deal. You got to plant them correctly. For good blooms, you got to feed them correctly. You want to make sure that you're giving it all that you can from a nutritional standpoint, because when you get a fast-growing plant, they use the existing nutrition from the soil very quickly. And as they accumulate that into their system, of course, they're putting out new growth. So this type of plant, especially if it's in a pot, maybe, you know, you put them in a big pot and maybe have it on a porch next to whatever as decoration. Water is important, of course, but they're not water lovers. So they don't seek water. So it's not that's not the big deal. If you water them once a week in the summer, it's probably more than ample. But the fertilization is a key to good blooming and a good healthy plant. You want a lot of blooms. There are liquid fertilizers, the type that you mix 2 tablespoons in a gallon of water, or 4 tablespoons in a gallon of water, and then you water that in. Like on a clematis or anything in a pot that's blooming, you want to make sure you do that at least once a month during the growing season. And you can gauge it. You can see if you're doing it once a month, and you can gauge how much you put in it into the plant, and see what the net result. Do you see additional growth? Do you see additional flowers? Do you see larger flowers or longer blooming flowers? That's all connected to the available nutrition that the root system has access to. So that's really important. But if you fertilize, like I say, once a month, starting maybe in March and ending in November, they're going to do very, very well for you. And of course, in the heat of summer, you want to keep them damp because it's hot, with a weekly watering. But again, not soaking, not so as dribbling out the end of a pot, especially if it's a large pot. The one of the pots we have out there is probably, 2 feet tall and at least 2 feet in diameter, and that clematis has been in there for 5-6 years. It does well, but it gets watered at least once a week in the summertime, and it gets fertilized at least once a month in the summertime, and that's why it has so many darn blooms growing up through that Japanese maple, and it's in the perfect location. One of these days I want to take a photo of it, but there's so many leaves on the Japanese maple you can't you can't sometimes see all the blooms that unless you're right under the tree looking up into it, and it's neat that way. But prune dead stems. Again, on a vine, you're going to have a lot of dead stems. Prune them off. Get rid of them. They're unsightly. They don't enhance the plant in any way. There's no life going into them. And they're dead. You can tell they're dead. They're brown looking, and they're crispy, and they break easily, and there's no leaves on them. That's a dead one. Cut it off. Use some sharp pruners and just cut it off. And it doesn't really enhance the plant that's left, because there was nothing going on anyway. But what it does, it just makes the plant look better overall, and that's a good thing to do. And you can do this any time of the year. Just remember, just the dead stems in spring and summer, and enjoy. You can enjoy this. So the birds that are going to be attracted, and you'll love it. Give it a try, and that's it.
And where can people find you?
Right here in the studio. No.
That's like 1 hour a week.
1 hour a week right here. No, south of Winston on Highway 99, about a half mile south of Winston on the left. All of our roofs are bright, bright green, and we got a lot of good plants, and we got great people that can answer all your questions and help you. You'll love us.
All right, back next week with the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show, the Commissioner of Dirt. Afternoon Report is coming up next on KQEN, where it's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock somewhere.